Excuse me.
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 Hello, everybody, and welcome to Morgan Dorks. This is a bi-weekly Daria podcast where we take an in-depth look at our favorite animated teenage misanthrope episode by episode. I'm Rob Press.
And I'm Nissa Lee. And today we are looking at Season 5, Episode 7, One J at a Time, in which... Oh, I love that title. Well, Quinn decides she needs to get a steady boyfriend, which means the three J's finally get their shot. Also, Jake gets into a fight with a local squirrel. This episode aired on May 21st, 2001, and was written by Ron Corsillo. No, Corsillo?
I really butchered that.
Ron Corsillo and AJ Poulin. This is the only episode either of them wrote.
So I just realized this episode's going to go live on the 20th, which means this will be airing almost exactly 20 years to the day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just barely missed it.
Crazy.
Yeah, a little bit, because I remember watching these episodes as they aired, like for the first time. Wow.
You're so old.
I'm extremely old. I'm falling apart. It's really unfortunate.
Yeah, I know. Our bodies just betray us.
Yeah, turning into dust.
Over and over again. Can't wait until I'm dust, man. I'll be rid of this meat sack.
away from this mortal coil and...
Yeah.
all right. Well, with...
Skulls.
Skull, yeah.
Meat sacks. Boy.
Our Patreon listeners might appreciate that one. I was going to make a skulls joke, and I was like, I would have to explain that, but no. That's...
Just yeah, bringing that one's... it up anyway.
Alrighty. Just cutting this off at the pass. If for some reason we end up getting a little bit weird with our audio cues this week, it's because for some reason Nissa is not able to hear the soundboard. So thankfully we don't have any clips from the show in this episode. That would make it extremely difficult. But
yeah, yeah, it would. I would be really confused.
You'd be lost.
It's been like a week since I've watched this episode.
But she won't be able to hear like the interstitial music or anything like that. So, you know, there's a chance things get weird at one point or another. Just, you know, hang in
there.
It's
probably my fault. I don't know what I did, but I did something.
Guys, it's been 5 seasons. We're almost there.
Right. We've got this.
Yeah, we're totally seasoned professionals at this point. Not at all. Yeah. Just flailing away, ping-ponging across the hallway. All right. I'm going to hit the interstitial music that may or may not exist, and then we will go into our beat by beat.
Yes.
Okay, we open at the Morgendorfer dinner table, where Quinn's talking about a new fashion television series and Jake's cooking dinner, so Helen and Daria are just loving life right now. Jake's excited about what he's cooked up, apparently Thai peanut sauce a la Jake, but Helen reminds him that his history in the kitchen is sorted. Turns out she's right to be doubtful, as Thai peanut sauce a la Jake sucks the moon clear out of the sky. Helen decides to heat up some lasagna and balance is restored to House Morgendorfer. Meanwhile, Quinn reveals that she never saw the end of the fashion TV series because Daria received a package in the middle of it, which turns out to be a very nice first edition book that Tom found for her on the internet. Helen points out that's a very thoughtful gift from a boyfriend who clearly cares and implies that Quinn might not understand that because it, quote, takes maturity and perspective. Quinn takes offense, rightfully so, but Helen's on to the next thing. She notes that she and Jake haven't really had the opportunity to get to know Tom and invites him to dinner. Daria's reluctant, but we can see where this is going. On the walk out to the garage to dump his latest failed culinary experiment, Jake notes that one of the trash cans has been upturned. He rages at skater punks and then the sky because he's Jake.
I have to say, I really like Jake in this episode.
Yeah, I think this is like peak. This is maybe peak Jake.
Like, yeah.
This is exactly what he should be doing.
It is really, really good. I think it's really funny that he calls his dishes a la Jake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, are you included in the dish, Jake?
Oh, you know, there's sweat equity in there, right? There's
yeah. Or you know, there may be actual sweat in there.
Yeah. Or like pieces. I don't trust Jake around a mandolin.
Ew.
This episode's going to go places, folks.
Yeah, it really is.
I guess, judging by the conversations we've had in the 15 minutes we've been recording. I appreciate there's a really great little line here right off the top where Quinn, Daria takes the book out of the package it came in, and Quinn's like, "What is that?" And Daria's response was, "My people call them books."
Yeah, that's a really good one. Yeah, I was staring at, I kept like pausing the screen to see if I could figure out what book it was, and all I saw was death.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, on brand with yes. with this week apparently. Yeah. But yeah, so the book, which I did the same thing for a good long while, and then eventually I was like, all right, well, somebody's got to have like a list of all the books noted in Daria, and
because
somebody does
have
it. Yeah, and it does exist. So I'm going to link that in the show notes. It's a pretty neat little site. But they noted that the book that Tom bought Daria is Death in Venice, which is a 1912 novella by Thomas Mann. A first edition of it apparently runs anywhere from hundreds to thousands of dollars. So,
ooh.
Yeah, big spender on Tom.
Wow. Yikes.
Not a bad thing to just get in the mail.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust it now. But thank you for figuring that out because, yeah, it was definitely killing me.
Yeah, it was. I probably spent a good 15, 20 minutes trying to figure it out. But I was like,
also, I made a pun. Ha.
Boy. Perfect.
Maybe the delivery was not great, but.
Oh, we're so on the ball this week.
Oh, yeah.
So Quinn saying, lots of guys care about me. I don't know why anyone would settle for just one is extremely on brand for her, and I love it dearly. On the flip side, Helen's approach to the subject feels like oddly conservative. Having a steady boyfriend does not take maturity in perspective. I don't know. Maybe that's just me projecting like 2021
what does it
values.
Take?
Doesn't take maturity in perspective.
Okay.
If it did, high schoolers wouldn't do it. I don't know. Maybe that's just me projecting 2021 values onto a show that aired literally 20 years ago today.
Right. So are you saying like steady dating or steady relationships are the easy thing?
I am saying that your ability to hold a relationship, especially at Quinn's age, probably does not have a ton to do with maturity and perspective so much as it has to do with like convenience or you both like the same things.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of like, look, a marriage takes maturity and perspective to hold together. You know, a high school relationship, maybe not as much, which isn't to say that no high schooler has maturity or perspective. That's complete bullshit, of course. But like,
you're just digging that hole, Rob. You're just digging it.
I'm saying that I knew plenty of people who went steady in high school and had neither maturity nor perspective.
Right. Yes. And I find it really, really funny that you just used the phrase went steady because that was totally, just to clarify, that was for our younger audience, that was not a phrase that we used.
No.
It's entered
my vernacular now.
Yeah. Because. You're an old man now, because apparently once you become an old man, you say things like went steady.
Yeah, yeah. There comes a point where you're basically just an extra from Greece.
Yeah,
And we've all hit that.
Oh man. Yeah.
We were using the phrase hit that in high school, but it meant something differently.
Definitely. So this episode, you know, the going steady has it has definitely brought me back, and I have done a lot of reminiscing since watching this episode. So we'll get a lot of my perspective, but just to kind of like frame where I'm coming from in this when I'm talking about this episode is I was one of those people who had the same boyfriend for almost all of high school.
Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
you had so much maturity and perspective.
No, I definitely did not. To give perspective, in addition to being a serial monogamist, I have not also been very monogamous. So. that's the perspective that I'm bringing to this. and by that I mean at least later on, you know, I've had open relationships. So there you
go.
Sure. Just to clarify. And I may also have been a dipshit, but you know.
Well, I mean,
who isn't?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's just, yeah. You got to get it out of your system. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, back to the point about Helen being oddly conservative. Like, I'm really trying to give Helen the benefit of the doubt in this episode. I think that she is trying to praise Daria from the place that she knows best, you know?
Sure.
She's happy that her girl has finally shown some sign of normalcy. She has a romantic relationship, but she does this without really thinking of how Quinn is going to process the information. Right. Also, she just sat through a, you know, conversation about Quinn and television and fashion. So like, yeah, maybe she's not feeling very gracious.
She's a little tuned out at the moment.
Yeah.
So as you referenced a little bit, earlier, Jake's previous outings with culinary exploits, Outpost Ari Reborn points out that Jake's been a terrible cook for like the entire run of the show.
Oh yeah.
You know, we've watched him try to make penne alla pesto, kitchen sink stew, and chili con cheese puffs, none of which have gone over well. On this one in particular, though, I might sympathize with him because I don't think I've ever gotten the Thai recipe right, and it's certainly not for lack of trying.
Yeah. Apparently, he's trying to cook from a foreign language cookbook, so that may be his problem.
Perfect. That's what you want. Yep. Jake,
I mean, he's going for authentic, but just at the expense of the dish. He's trying.
I made, what was it called? I made Thai peanut sauce a la Jake, but what did it cost?
My taste buds.
Everything. On the walk to school, Jane assesses the situation and says that parents are just kind of meant to embarrass their kids, so you've just got to kind of roll with it. But Daria reveals she's more afraid that Tom's going to mock her parents, specifically Jake, relentlessly. Apparently, her plan is to avoid this whole thing and pretend she forgot it and never actually bother telling Tom about it at all. This is an interesting turn here. Mm-hmm. I think Daria is assuming that Tom's going to be kind of shitty and she's like actively defending her father. We know Daria legitimately cares about her dad, so I guess the latter isn't necessarily all that surprising, but it does feel a little weird that she automatically assumes that Tom is just going to like lay into him savagely.
I'm not completely surprised. Are you surprised that I'm not surprised? but it, for me particularly, it's because both Tom and Daria have made smartassery a sport, right? Like, they're sure. always kind of making fun of people. So maybe she's just afraid that it's going to turn on her dad, you know?
I suppose. I think the thing that surprised me isn't necessarily that Tom would have like some snarky things to say about Jake. I think it was just, I would expect her to expect better of Tom than to just like say them.
you know? I don't know. I do like though how in this scene, her suspicion is compounded by the fact that Tom has never met Jane's parents while Jane and he were dating.
Right.
So it makes it so that there's no precedent. And you know, it's a very subtle way to show that Daria's relationship is progressing, right?
Yeah.
That it's kind of on solid ground. And she's on solid ground with her friend, of course. It also makes me a little sad that while Jane was in her relationship with Tom, you know, a serious relationship that wasn't going well, she didn't have her parents around to lean on, you know?
Yeah.
When things got tough. Poor Jane.
Yeah. You know, I guess we don't think a whole lot about that. We don't think a whole lot about that relationship anymore, do we?
No.
It kind of gets forgotten, even though it took up the entirety of a season and was a huge part of an extremely, you know, tumultuous couple of arcs there.
Well, it caused a lot of tension for a little while between Daria and Jane, and now we're over it, so we want to forget it. We want to forget that hard time.
At Lawndale High, the fashion club meets in the cafeteria to the tune of Play by Jennifer Lopez. Quinn has requested an emergency meeting to declare that she's decided to get a steady boyfriend. The fashion club is initially mystified, but Sandy turns on a dime and decides it'd be great for them to all help Quinn find a partner. Quinn accepts their help, but the moment she's gone, we see exactly why Sandy's suddenly so magnanimous. With Quinn out of the dating pool, there will be more guys for the rest of them.
Of course. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I love how mystified the fashion club is at Quinn's decision, and how one of the things they say she'll be missing out on is the cash prizes. The what now? Cash prizes? Where were they when I was dating?
Maybe it's a euphemism.
Maybe.
Cash prizes will be pretty nice, though. Especially in a high school relationship. I got to say, when this scene started and the fashion club rejected the idea of Quinn getting a boyfriend, internally, I was like, but with her going steady with someone, you'll all have more boys to choose from. And then it happened. Sandy Griffin and I shared a wavelength. And I'm not sure how to feel about that.
I wouldn't be too alarmed. The logic is very sound.
Or are we both sharing a wavelength with Sandy Griffin, and that's something for us both to be concerned about?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it is. As a last note, I think that as I was reminiscing on, you know, my high school dating experience or going steady experience, I feel like dating really wasn't a thing in where I was from, or at least in my social circles. I don't know about you, but for me, maybe it was because everyone kind of knew each other already. So what was the point? Mm-hmm. Or maybe there just weren't many places to go except like in the woods.
I mean, that's where all the good dates happen.
Yeah. I mean, come on. That's where it all happens. or because dating really just happened, or dating is like, you know, the testing people out really just happened through AOL Instant Messenger, right?
That aspect of it, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it depends on what you mean by dating. Like, were there people in relationships who just didn't really, like, go places and they would just, like, hang out? Or do you mean just, like, straight up there just weren't many relationships?
No, there weren't many people who were going, like, going on dates.
Okay.
And like going on dates with various people, like like Quinn does, you know?
Okay, yeah.
It was like people went out with the people that they, you know, were in relationships with if they went out, you know?
Right. Okay, yeah.
What about you?
Oh, Jesus.
Can you remember that far back, old man?
I can remember that far. You're older than me. maybe not spiritually, but physically, you have been on this plane of existence longer than I have.
It shows.
I only had two pretty brief relationships in high school. I didn't really start dating at all, like all that much, until I got to college. And then did a lot of unfortunate catching up. Dating was definitely a thing. There were definitely, you know, circles and folks who just kind of like, you know, hey, I'm going out with so-and-so that day. I'm going out with so-and-so that day, that kind of thing. I don't know. I was always with the nerds and such. So
yeah, me too. So I'm not really sure if I have a very accurate perspective.
Right. My frame of reference for this is extremely limited. But
yes,
I will say, you know, the social circle opened up dramatically in AOL Instant Messenger.
Oh yes.
Just in general, like that is where all of the drama happened.
Oh yeah.
And then high school was just like a place to convene and talk about it in person briefly.
and then retire
to your separate corners and then talk about it through AIM at length until like 2 a.m.
Those were the days.
Totally. I was talking about away messages the other day. I miss away messages.
I do too. And, you know, not so much staying up till 2 a.m. fighting with your dial-up.
No, that part sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, dial-up. Nobody has to worry about dial-up anymore, do they?
Yeah.
Well, some places still do. Some places still do. But
somehow the sound of it is very comforting.
Yes. I mean, you can probably – I won't even bother searching for it. I will guarantee you that you can find a 10-hour cut on YouTube of just that dial-up sound repeating over and over and over and over.
It's somebody's ASMR, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At
the Morgendorfer house that evening, Quinn's going over her list of boyfriend qualifications. Helen's helping out, though her message isn't really resonating, and her years of frustration with Jake are showing through. Quinn decides to finish her list upstairs. The next day, weapon of choice by Fatboy Slim, holy shit, yes, plays as we see an enormous line of teenage boys at the Pizza King. They are all waiting for their chance to interview for the position of Quinn's boyfriend. We watch the 3Js get absolutely demolished as Daria and Jane watch in amazement.
So businesslike.
Totally. You have it in here. Her interview style is, you put harsh in all caps.
Yeah, it is absolutely harsh. Like there's a right or wrong answer and that is it. and it's in front of everybody, right? So she asks one of the Jays, if she were stranded on a desert island, what would he bring her? And he basically says he would bring her a boat to rescue her, which is adorable. And she says, nope, wrong answer. It's sunscreen. Like, Quinn, come on. Kind of like open up those blinders a little bit, please.
Yeah. It's the, you know, we'll have some qualms about how Quinn is handled in this episode. There are definitely some, like, there are some good moments. There are some bad moments in terms of, like, Quinn's character. I will say, I appreciate, while I think you're spot on about her not necessarily seeing the forest for the trees, in terms of like what she'll accept as an answer from the Jays, I do think that it is pretty nice that she's like, no, I know exactly what I'm looking for. I know exactly what I want, and you did not make it.
It is very on brand for Quinn, that is for sure.
Yeah. Also, I'll just note, for some reason, you know, four seasons plus eight episodes in, this seems like a good place to point out that I really appreciate the complexity of Helen and Jake's marriage.
Aww.
In a show that makes so many adult characters one-note cardboard cutouts and frequently does the same to Jake, Ellen and Jake's relationship has layers. You know, it's not perfect. They're frequently frustrated or even angry with one another, but they also clearly love one another and have found a way to make this whole thing work. Our generation has seen no shortage of like baby boomer humor that just revolves entirely around husbands hating their wives and vice versa. So it's just kind of refreshing.
Oh, absolutely. And it reminds me a bit of the story about the anniversary candle.
Yes.
You know, there's so much love there.
There is.
There's so much clumsy love.
There's so much patience.
Yes.
but compassion. And that's the thing is, like, you know, for a marriage to work long term, and theirs has worked long term, you know, you need to have patience. You need to have compassion. Like, it doesn't matter how, you know, perfect you think this person is. At some point, they're going to piss you off. Like, that's just how it works. And it's about, you know, just knowing that it's about being able to get through that and being able to, you know, figure out, there's your damn maturity and perspective, is being able to deal with that.
There you go.
Yeah. To bring it all back. Anyway, I don't know. It's something that really struck me with that moment for some reason, like Helen expressing that frustration, but also, again, knowing that it's coming from a place of, I love this guy so much, but there's this one thing.
Right. You know, I did have a moment while I was watching this scene where I thought, maybe Helen's pushing this whole like steady boyfriend thing because she's kind of like, because this is what she knows and this is where she is, and she's just like, come to the dark side with me.
If I'm going to be miserable, we all have to be miserable.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it that way, but I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt because you are looking at it with very kindly, you know. And I want to be that kind.
I mean, look, this show has, you know, I mentioned like boomer humor about husbands hating wives and all that, but like, and this show has had its moments of like Helen just straight demolishing Jake for being an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's had plenty of Jake expressing extreme frustration with Helen. Like there's been plenty of that, but it's balanced out so frequently with, you know, these really touching moments between them, you know, like you said, like the candle. Like that moment where she pulls that candle out and he like actively recoils from it because he doesn't recognize. Like, that's amazing. That's so good. And that doesn't happen if those characters don't care about each other.
Yep.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's see. So that night, Jake arrives home to find the trash cans have yet again been upturned. He again blames the skater punks, but the culprit is revealed to be a particularly mischievous squirrel. Jake sizes up his new enemy. Back at Lawndale High, Quinn's meeting with the fashion club to discuss the different candidates. The three J's roll by to ask if she's made a decision yet, and Quinn buckles under the combined pressure of the fashion club and these three dipshits. Quinn randomly picks Jamie, the blonde one with the earring and the weirdly deep voice. The other two J's are miffed and wander off, followed by their newly taken friend. Sandy encourages Quinn to run after Jamie because he's now her responsibility. And Quinn has left the table. And after Quinn has left the table, Sandy engages the other fashion club members on how they're going to enjoy their newfound wealth of dudes. Weapon of Choice plays yet again as we move into the end of Act 1. I just want to point out, Tiffany has not too many lines in this episode. I guess she doesn't have many lines in any episode, but season 5 Tiffany is maybe one of my favorite little surprises of this entire run, because her just stone face with, this is the hardest and most important decision you'll ever have to make.
Oh, was yeah.
Incredible.
Yes. absolutely.
And Quinn making that decision with Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo is just wonderful. Also, oh my God, we might actually be able to tell the three J's apart by the end of this.
No. Impossible. Can't do it.
This is like, you know what? Even if I know by the end of the episode, I'm not going to absorb that information.
No.
It's gone the moment I hit X on the browser.
Yep. Not important.
I've got a child, a life, a family. I need to, I don't have space for this knowledge.
Yep. Very selective nowadays. Oh, anyway, I think that this scene gives us a very nice preview of the growing conflict for Quinn in this episode, which is she has absolutely no idea how to be in a relationship.
Yep.
And Sandy knows it.
Yep. Again.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Just the perfect heel. She's such a great villain.
Mm-hmm.
Act two opens in the Morgendorfer kitchen where Jake's setting up a squirrel trap and slowly losing his goddamn mind while Helen tries to schedule dinner with Tom and Daria runs interference. I just want to point out real quick to go back just a second. Have you ever had a squirrel knock over your trash cans?
Not that I know of.
Like, I feel like a raccoon, absolutely. Because they got some heft to them.
Yeah.
Like, they're known for that.
Your trash can has to be pretty flimsy, I'm thinking. Or it has to be a pretty hefty squirrel.
Right? Or he's like coming at it like just the right angle from up on a tree or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Although this storyline seems rather familiar to me. I don't know if it's like a trope of like man against squirrel. but I can't help but hear in my head the refrain from the children's books, those darn squirrels.
There is a very like, it's a very like sitcom dad situation.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Anyway, Quinn enters to announce that she is officially seeing Jamie and will not accept unsolicited calls from any other boys. Helen, persevering through the insanity as always, tries to continue her conversation with Daria, but is pulled away by a phone call from work. Daria gets 2 seconds of silence before Quinn comes over to humble brag about having a boyfriend. Daria points out that a true girlfriend wouldn't have time to brag about having a boyfriend because she'd be too busy being glued to the side of said boyfriend. Quinn's lack of expertise in this world shines through and the ruse works perfectly, so she runs off just in time for Helen to come back and watch out the window as Jake appears to have gotten himself stuck in the squirrel trap.
Good job, Jake.
She and Daria sit and discuss Jake's behavior and they make a deal. Helen will talk to Jake about how he acts and Daria will talk to Tom about coming to dinner. I just want to note that Google Docs accepts humble brag as a word and awesome. I love it. Yeah. Awesome. Fantastic.
So I may have missed this part in the show, but did Jake already own a trap or did he go out to get one?
I don't.
Because like he won't go out to buy bait. You know, he's just like, maybe they like, you know, salami or whatever. but he has the squirrel trap, which strikes me as just very, very odd. I mean,
it is a little odd.
I mean, it's not necessarily a squirrel trap. It's a small animal trap.
Right, because a cat gets stuck in there.
Yes.
A little bit later on. So that's, you know, it could just be like a random small animal trap. I also like, you know, do they sell squirrel bait? Is there such a thing as squirrel bait?
No, but he doesn't like do his research. You know, he's just like, let me grab any old thing from the fridge, which, yeah, okay, sure. I mean, he is eating out of the trash, but I don't know. It, like, something about it strikes me as, like, a very suburban thing to have is, like, a small animal trap.
Yes. Yes. I forget what they're called, but they're, like, we have mouse traps, but not ones that are actually, like, intended to kill the mouse. They just, you know, collect it so that you can set it free somewhere.
Right.
We have a couple of those because we saw a mouse in our apartment once. So I don't know, you know, they'll come in handy when we actually move into a proper house. I imagine, but yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you have a cat.
Yeah, that's true. Although historically speaking, he did not do anything with that mouse. He would catch up to it, but then he would just kind of put it under his paws and he would sit there for a second and then he would lift up his paws because he wanted to snuggle it. Because as we'll cover later, he is the best cat. And of course the mouse would be like, all right, cool, peace out. And then, you know, and then the chase begins anew. It's wonderful. He's such a little idiot. I love him so much. This show, you know, we see Jake out in the backyard with the squirrel trap stuck on his arm. This show has forever had an undercurrent of, you know, men are mostly dipshits to be managed by much smarter and much more competent women. Mm-hmm. It's really shining through in this episode.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I have to say, I find this plot line very entertaining. and at first I thought that this was going to be another, like, Jake is a bad cook episode, but mm-hmm. it is, you know, a squirrel catching episode, and it's a nice turn of events.
Appealing to Nyssa's rural sensibilities.
Man versus nature.
Up in Quinn's room, it is 6:30 p.m. according to the ominous clock we're shown in the top left corner, and she's reading a magazine and talking to Jamie on the phone. Note I said she's talking to Jamie and not that she and Jamie are talking. The ominous clock returns at 8:05 and Quinn's still going at it with increasingly listless Jamie struggling to pay attention. By 11:49, the poor guy's bladder is about to explode and he flees the room. Of course, that's the moment Quinn demands he respond, and when he fails, she breaks up with him on the spot. That's a high school relationship.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Jamie never had a chance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Quinn can talk, huh?
Yeah. That said, this is, look, it's entertaining, but also, like, this is a level of self-absorption that Quinn has kind of drifted away from this season. And it's funny to watch, but it's also a little odd. Like, replace Quinn in this scene with Sandy. Does it go any differently?
Oh, I think that's a really good point. That, like, we've moved beyond, or Quinn has moved beyond this. But I feel like Sandy would have asked for a response and been disappointed a lot sooner.
That is a fair point.
I don't know. I didn't really see any hint of this, but I'd have to imagine that Quinn is also kind of, you know, trying her hardest to keep the conversation going because she thinks that's what she's supposed to do, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Just assuming here.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
That said, I wonder if late into the night phone conversations are a thing of the past for, you know, high school relationships. Like, do teenagers call each other anymore? Listeners?
Seriously.
Help us out, please. My suspicion, you know, is that this is a cultural relic.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, if I hold my cell phone in my hands for more than 10 minutes, my hand cramps. And it may be just because I'm old, but I have a sneaking suspicion it's because, you know, a smartphone is not ergonomically designed to be held like a landline right. phone.
Yeah. Yeah. There is something like inherently uncomfortable about having to talk on one for a very long time.
Oh my God. It's torture.
And also the batteries just like aren't meant for it at some point.
And the phone gets warm and no.
The screen gets all clammy. You gotta like wipe it down and everything. And it's just
I'm just going to put you on speakerphone.
Yeah, I think once I don't know, I very rarely did the talk on the phone because I hate the phone in the first place. So like that's
right.
You know, that's a forever thing. Like Sheila hardly ever calls me at all because she's like, it's a totally different person. which is fair.
I don't want to know him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like who is this totally like laconic idiot on the other end of this line? But anyway, like I think the moment texting really entered the repertoire for everybody, like talking on the phone up until very, very late at night kind of fell by the wayside to an extent. Although, like, you know, especially with a lot of, like, you know, you get that, like, young love or whatever, like, you do want to do the whole, like, talk for, you know, forever on the phone, because that's all you want to do is, like, spend time around or near or engaging with this person. And there's, like, you hang up, no, you hang, like, that shit. I'm sure that that still exists to some extent. But yeah, I think now that texting is a thing, now that, you know, you have Snapchat, you have TikTok, you have so many different ways to, like, keep in touch with folks that doesn't rely on you, like, being glued to your phone and paying attention to it at all times and disengaging with the rest of the world. Yeah, I think your suspicions sound correct, but I would love to be informed by the younger listeners.
Perhaps we should have done some research on this.
Maybe. Although I suspect a lot of it would be kind of right where we're at. Like, I don't know. Like, all we can do is ask the young people about it.
It's kind of, I mean, it kind of sounds like common sense.
Actually, that reminds me. So we heard from, we got a DM from Thomas Godfrey, a friend of the podcast, who pointed out that somebody had mentioned us over on Reddit, over on the Daria Reddit. Somebody was like, hey, y'all listen to Morgan Dorks. So there's a nice little Morgan Dorks thread, which is, I popped in on, the Reddit Morgan Dorks representative, which is a position that didn't exist until then.
Social media representative for Morgan Dorks.
Yeah. So I just popped in to drop one or two comments. And one of the things somebody said was like, yeah, I'm always a little bit bummed out when there's no cultural context. And like, me too, kind of. Oh, I hear you. It's something that, you know, it's kind of a twofold thing. Part of the reason we don't do cultural context all that much anymore, which isn't to say we're never going to do it again, but part of the reason we don't do it too much anymore is because the show doesn't really, like, Daria as a show doesn't really rely on the cultural touchstones of the late 90s and early 2000s in the later seasons.
Right.
It focuses way more on its characters.
It's more character driven now.
Totally. So you need less cultural context. And it's also a time thing. Like, cultural context takes a while. And we're both,
let's be honest.
That was the other thing. I was like, look, I hate to admit it, but time is also a factor. Like, we're both somehow busier than we were when we started this thing. So
it's like the pandemic didn't happen.
those are factors into it. I really do miss the days of just dedicating, like, hours to researching a thing and then, you know, finding a way to report on it that didn't just take like 3 hours to read. It takes some time and, you know, we try to sprinkle it in now. So I think, like, you know, talking about going steady and, you know, high school dating life and all that and talking
on
the phone.
It's way more personal, especially in this episode.
Yeah. And I think we sprinkle it throughout. To some extent now.
Yes.
I think, you know, we'll talk about, like, you know, little instances here or there. I don't know. I too would like to see a comeback for cultural context. So hopefully we'll get to it before the end of the series.
So it just boggles my mind that people are, like, as up to date as they are, that they're not getting cultural context. Because I'm, like, way behind on all the podcasts I listen to.
Oh, there's people who would be like, oh yeah, I've binged Morgan Dorks a few times now, and I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
I really have a hard time wrapping my head around it. But
oh, same.
I'm probably it's probably better that I just stay under my rock.
It is forever mind blowing to me that people, one, listen to this thing, two, listen to it. Or love to listen to it so much they would binge it. Like, God bless you, folks. Seriously, it's absolutely awesome to hear. It's just, on this end of things, I'm like, wow. Yeah. There are much better podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, this is the most that I talk all week.
Same. Absolutely.
And the fact that people want to listen to that is wow.
It's very humbling and adorable.
It makes my heart grow
Totally.
10 sizes.
That's so many sizes.
So many sizes.
That's so, I'm a cardiac patient. Your heart cannot grow that many sizes. That's bad.
You don't know anything.
Oh, boy, that was a tangent. Out in the yard the next day, Flavor of the Week by American Hi-Fi. Oh my God, wow. The soundtrack this week. Flavor of the Week by American Hi-Fi is playing as Jake checks on the squirrel trap. Instead of a squirrel, he finds Mr. Whiskers, the neighbor's cat. Mr. Whiskers seems nice and friendly right up until he's properly out of the trap and Jake has picked him up, at which point he slashes at Jake and flees the scene.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Cat lover. Cat lover brain kicking in here. This should probably go without saying, but never try to pick up a cat that isn't yours. They might seem super friendly, but they can turn on a dime. And when that happens, you very much do not want to be holding on to them. This goes super mega ultra double for a cat that you have trapped.
Yeah.
Just like it assume just that it wants sense. To kill you.
Yeah.
Like they're small, but like they don't give a fuck. Like my cat Mufasa, I mentioned him a little bit earlier. He's the cuddliest. He's the most friendly thing imaginable. And I know every cat owner says that, but it's legit true about this guy. But I've watched him overpower three veterinarians at once because they're trying to give him a pill. Like, they have a mode that they can go into that is terrifying and you don't want to be near it.
Oh, man. For the record, like, he's not exaggerating. Mufasa is one of the sweetest cats that I have ever met. I'm not much of a cat person.
He just wants to chill. He just wants to hang out all the time.
Like I said, I'm not a cat person, but I love cat sitting Mufasa. Like I love going over and saying hi, and he likes to cuddle. Like I just sit down on the couch and he's just or
he beanbag
or whatever, and he's just like, pet me.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've cat sat other people's cats, and they've like I've worn protective gear. You know, yeah.
Wandering into the house with like an upturned garbage can lid.
Cats are dangerous, man.
They are.
Oh, but. Yeah, Jake's an idiot. Like as soon as as he reached for that cat, I was like, what are you doing? The Morgendorfers are not pet owning folks, and it shows.
Just don't pick up a cat if it's not yours. Just don't do it. It's bad news. It's bad news for everybody involved. Actually, Mufasa has had a guest appearance on this podcast once or twice. If you sign up for our Patreon, we have, I almost forgot they were on there, but I put on some like bloopers and outtakes from the first couple episodes, first couple episodes. It was one of the first things I put on our Patreon, and you can hear Mufasa totally racking his head against the bottom of our table as he tries to jump up onto my lap while we're recording.
Oh man, what an idiot.
He's extremely stupid, but he's so lovable.
It's probably just the number of times he's hit his head on that table.
He was that dumb well before that. I guarantee it didn't help, though. Inside, Daria is watching television. Quinn drops in and tells Daria that she and Jamie are no longer on speaking terms, but she'd welcome a phone call from her new boyfriend, Joey. Daria points out Joey's at football practice and guilts Quinn into going to spend some time with her new beau. Later on, over in the kitchen, Helen approaches Jake to talk about dinner with Tom. She asks Jake to be on his best behavior and not give up the squirrel and give up the squirrel hunt for the time being. Jake agrees, but Helen is not optimistic. We cut to the living room where Daria is reading the newspaper and Quinn's talking on the phone with Sandy while waiting for Joey to arrive for a date. Apparently, one of the guys Quinn had on the back burner is taking someone else to a Guys to Guys concert and she's feeling deeply left out. While Joey arrives, bouquet in hand, Quinn says, "Change of plans. We're not going to dinner. We're going to the concert." Joey, quite fairly, points out the concert is sold out. Quinn feels unsupported by her new boyfriend, and just like that, Joey is now her old boyfriend. At that moment, Helen wanders into the room to tell Daria that she and Jake talked and everything should be okay for dinner with Tom. Helen then tells Quinn to invite her boyfriend as well, and that she's super proud of Quinn for showing maturity and going steady. Quinn, a little hesitant, notes she'll be happy to invite her boyfriend over once she figures out who it's going to be. And once again, we hear Weapon of Choice as we head into the end of Act 2. I know I don't point out the fashion, like, basically ever. What the fuck is going on with Quinn here?
Oh, man. She's going to a fancy restaurant, so she must show her belly button. for the viewers or listeners' reference, Quinn is wearing a blue striped tank top. So it's like dark blue and then like powder blue. Mm-hmm. And it has an Empire waist, or Empire, however you want to say it. And the fabric splits at both the front and the back to reveal her midriff and the small of her back, which is kind of weird. She's also wearing a powder blue asymmetrical pencil-ish skirt and white platform heels, which really is like the icing on the bottom of the cake, apparently. And to top it off, she has one of those beaded choker necklaces that has one of those dangly bits, and her hair is in these high pigtail buns. She is basically at the top of her 90s fancy fashion game, and I am having flashbacks of that very special polyester.
This is mind-blowing.
Yeah. It is like she looks great. But like, it's just a reminder of how totally inappropriate all clothing was. Popular clothing was for teenagers at that point. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm serious about that fabric. It just kind of like makes me like cringe a little bit thinking about it now.
Can I just, I need to applaud you for your ability to describe that outfit, like point by point.
Well, thank you.
if you ask me to describe Quinn's outfit, I'd be like, I don't know. There's a lot of blue shit happening. It's really weird. It's like ripped in half for some reason. Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
It's like from the Empire waist, it's like a triangle of like missing fabric.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's just baffling. Absolutely baffling. Thank you so much for being able to describe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Midriff bearing, you know, tops were totally the shit back then. So.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that. I remember the midriffs.
You remember all the midriffs.
Well, when you say it like that, that's poor Joey also didn't stand a chance.
Yeah. I can't even remember what he looks like.
What are you gonna do? I'll point out again. I'm just not wild about Helen and Quinn's dynamic here. Helen's pressuring Quinn into commitments that she doesn't want to be in by repeatedly stressing that her path thus far has been immature and somehow less valid. And it's just kind of a bummer.
Yeah. To that end, how do you feel about what Daria is doing to her?
I mean, it's not okay. So is the Daria side of it, I'm totally fine with. I think it's hilarious. I think Daria is, this is very much in Daria's wheelhouse, needling her sister and getting some amusement out of just making her sister's life a little bit harder. That's all pretty on brand. What I'm not wild about, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later too, is that Quinn is just falling for all of this stuff immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like hook, line, and sinker. She's not even putting up an argument. She's just like, oh shit, I'm doing this wrong. Like she's taking dating advice from Daria.
Yeah.
It's just so, it's out of character. And
you have a very good point there.
A point that you could certainly argue that I wouldn't necessarily disagree with, like I get it, would be, look, Quinn is brand new to this. She has no, like you said, she has no idea how to be in a relationship. Okay, cool. But I still feel she would exercise a little bit more common sense than what we're getting out of her here.
Well, the episode is just moving way too fast for her. She can't. she doesn't have time to think.
Act 3 opens with Tom arriving at the Morgendorfer residence, where Daria is waiting to prepare him for the arduous journey of a dinner with her parents. Tom could not be more chill about the whole thing and understands that Jake is pretty eccentric because Daria's already talked about it a ton. Still, Daria is clearly invested in making sure the evening doesn't go too off the rails. Quinn wanders in from upstairs and notes that her new boyfriend, Jeffy, will be here momentarily, and she would like for everybody to be on their best behavior. Daria and Tom go enjoy a little fun at Quinn's expense, only deepening the hole Jeffy will need to crawl out of, which is unfortunate for him because he just now got here.
Oh, the hole that he'll need to crawl out of that has the matching gravestones.
Oh my God.
It's amazing. We didn't include the clips here, which, hey, actually good because Nissa wouldn't be able to hear them. It'd be really weird. But Daria and Tom teaming up to make Quinn feel more insecure about this relationship is just amazing. I made it sound much more like hostile and malicious than it actually is. But like, I think
they're
at one point,
just having fun.
Yeah, they're just having fun. I think at one point, Tom calls Daria Snookums or something like that, and they walk away holding hands, and it's amazing. I will say, when Quinn walks in, her delivery of "my serious boyfriend Jeffy" absolutely killed me. Any sentence that starts with "my serious boyfriend Jeffy" is automatically up there with one of my favorites.
Yeah, it really does encapsulate the ridiculousness of a serious relationship at that stage in life, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, especially at Quinn's stage of life, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Some people are ready for a more serious relationship at that age, I suppose. But like, looking at it from a 2021 perspective, when most people go to college out of town and move across the country to get jobs and move again in 3 years because the job didn't work out and they burn through many sets of friends in the process, treating a high school partner as serious and long-lasting is a really silly exercise. But I suppose at that stage of life, like, everything is an extremely serious thing, and how dare you not take me seriously, right? So like, props to Helen and Jake for giving them the respect they need.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to think of people I know who were dating when we were in high school and who are still together. And I think I know like one or two couples, and good for them, man. That's amazing stuff. Cause I know, I really don't know many. You really just kind of have to hope that you like grow together in the same directions, because boy, howdy, is high school you not going to be the same as even like sophomore year of college you. So here's a thing that I'm kind of like struggling with a little bit. Tom's met Helen and Jake plenty of times. I get that sitting down to dinner with the partner's parents is a whole different animal, especially in high school. But Daria's acting like Tom has never met them before, and it's a little weird. And it feels like it's just kind of being like thrust upon her in this episode so that she has something to do. And I'm not totally wild about it.
Yeah, I understand. I really don't know what to say to that. Like, it's weird. You're right. But like, she does have something to do in the episode, but it's like all crammed at the beginning of this scene when, you know, Tom walks through the door and they mess with Quinn. So I don't know, like, the conflict of like, I don't want my boyfriend sitting down to dinner with my parents is really pretty meaningless.
Right. It's such an odd inclusion, and especially like in lieu of you know, some more character work we could have done, which we'll get into it a little bit later. It's just, I don't know, there are some missed opportunities here. And instead of engaging with those, you know, you engage with this really silly little side plot of Daria being worried about Tom meeting people that he's already met.
Yeah. I mean, if she were running more interference between Tom and her dad, you know, then that would make more sense. Right?
Sure. And that could be super entertaining too. Like you say that, and like in my head, that's already a pretty entertaining concept.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, it didn't happen.
One last thing, after Quinn hears Tom call Daria, I believe it was Snookums, Quinn decides to try an off-the-cuff nickname for Jeffy, and it's Jeffy Lube.
Oh, God. That poor kid.
I love it. I love it so much. I'm dying. It's so good. Don't worry. He's going to be put out of his misery soon enough. in the dining room, which we have never seen before and looks like it belongs in a totally different goddamn house. What is even happening? Mm-hmm. Dinner is underway. I'm realizing just now we might have seen this dining room one other time, and I think it was the episode with Val, where they sit down to dinner with Val, because they didn't do that at the Morgendorfer kitchen table. They did that at a different – they did that at a dining room table. I don't think the room
so
looked the same,
long
though.
Ago.
Yeah. You gotta reach back a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, this room doesn't look anything like anywhere else in the entire house. It's just a bizarre appearance. I don't know, whatever.
It really makes me angry when people have dining rooms that they don't use.
There's a very like Victorian.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah, it's this, oh yes, we'll go to the dining room.
Mm-hmm. Pinkies up.
I had the servants put out the good china. anyway, dinner is underway, but only just barely, when Tom asks Jake how things are going. And Jake lasts like 3 seconds before he just launches into an anti-squirrel tirade.
Oh, yeah.
Helen's mortified already, but then Tom joins in to talk about he's been wronged by squirrels in the past as well. And then Jeffy gets in on it because he's had experience catching squirrels, and he knows they can be lured with peanut butter. And unfortunately, timed call from work takes Helen out of the situation, which as always means things are only a second away from spiraling out of control. And when Tom spots the squirrel outside, all three men take off running.
Oh, boy.
We don't get into it anywhere in the beat by beat here, but I want to point out that apparently the little like side plot that's going on with Helen and work is her firm is trying to sue UNICEF.
Yes.
Which is a charity that collects pennies.
Uh-huh.
if I remember correctly, help disadvantaged children. And then apparently they take that back because they're intended to sue Uniroyal, the tire company.
They didn't realize that UNICEF was a
yeah, they didn't realize it was a charity.
Oh, man.
Anyway, that's just a nice little side thing. One other thing to point out, the song that plays when Tom spots the squirrel outside is O-Town's Liquid Dreams, which is very much about nocturnal emissions.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's not subtle either. Mm-hmm. O-Town. Also, I just want to point out, the show keeps finding new and interesting ways to say that men are dogs.
Other than the soundtrack?
other than the soundtrack.
Oh, man. At the same time, I feel like this is the most genuine and accurate depiction of what would happen when you put three guys around a table and introduce a squirrel problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
It's absolutely entertaining.
M guy can confirm. This is very us. This is on brand for our particular group. It's very funny. I don't know. I love it. I love that the entire episode has been like, oh my God, Jake, please don't show you're crazy. Please don't show you're crazy. And the moment he lets it slip, Tom's like, oh no, but this is a serious thing. And we need to deal with this right now.
Yes. And he's just not like playing to the dad, you know?
No, he is super into it. He and Jeffy both. God, it's so good. Nari and Quinn are left alone at the dining room table, which Quinn quickly vacates in distress over the fact that she'll never have a serious boyfriend. Nari is about to partake in the treasure trove of dinner rolls, because, much like with boys, less competition means more for each competitor, when Helen comes back in the room. Nari explains what happened and eventually tells Helen about she might have been giving Quinn unrealistic expectations about what being in a relationship actually entails. Helen chastises Daria for needling her sister, but then runs upstairs to do some damage control. Daria is left all alone, which would be a problem if she didn't have a whole plate of shoestring potatoes to herself.
Yum, yum.
Seriously.
You know, this scene is where I, like, really question the writer's grasp of Quinn's intelligence.
Yes.
I mean, like, how could she be so utterly manipulated by her sister and Sandy, you know, that she believes her boyfriend leaving the table to go on a squirrel catching adventure with her father means that she's been abandoned? Come on.
What a sentence that is.
I mean, like, it's going well, hun, you know? There are some really big leaps in logic here that I have a really hard time buying, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's just a bunch of not very proud moments for Quinn throughout this episode.
I suppose the question that we will not be able to answer is, like, is this, like, do we accept this as, like, as Quinn the character, or do we accept, or do we accept this as, like, Quinn who a writer that hasn't written for the show before is now writing? You know what I mean?
Yep. That sounds like episode ranking talk to me.
Yeah. Well, we sprinkle it in here and there.
There you go. It's like the cultural context. Yeah. We are rapidly approaching the end of this episode, and at this point, I am hoping we get at least one bit of self-reflection from Helen on how she's played just as big a role in Quinn's being upset as Daria has. Daria's antagonism is on purpose rather than accidental or inadvertent, so I guess it's a level above what Helen's been doing. But that doesn't mean that Helen's been doing okay.
Yeah.
But luckily, up in Quinn's room, Helen approaches for a talk, and we get exactly what I was hoping for.
Yay!
Quinn points out that Helen implied, purposefully or otherwise, that Quinn was immature for not holding down a steady relationship. Helen insists that having a boyfriend has nothing to do with being grown up, and
that doesn't sound like what she said before.
Not at all. She says that what's most important is doing what makes you happy. And if dating Tom makes Daria happy, that's awesome. And if dating a bunch of guys makes Quinn happy, that's awesome too. And just like that, Quinn's back in the game and dumping Jeffy, which, good. His name's Jeffy. Get the fuck out of here with that. More like it.
Yeah.
Right? I really do appreciate when the show calls itself out, so it's nice for this to wrap up like it did. That said, we're still left with the fact that Helen's initial stance on the connection between maturity and steady relationships is just weird. it might have been taking it. Okay, so what it ends up feeling like to me is we needed Helen to say this thing that she would never say so that we can have her come to Jesus moment a little bit later where she speaks like we would expect her to speak, and it's a really nice parenting moment. When in reality, Helen would not set herself up for this most of the time because she would just be a little bit more present in general. So earlier I was talking about how, like, you know, this thing with Daria where she's trying to run interference and or where she's trying to, you know, brace Tom for getting to meet Jake, and where she's like kind of haranguing or you know, waffling on like even letting Jake have dinner with her parents. I feel like the time we spent on that could have been spent taking a little bit of time to explore the complexities of parenting.
Yeah, you know, like, definitely.
As a parent, sometimes you're going to contradict yourself when you give your kids advice. It happens, and it can be confusing for everybody involved, especially when there's two kids involved. But you communicate and you learn and everybody's ultimately better off for it. And that seems like something we would explore in an episode of Daria. It would be great to see Helen grappling with that.
Yeah.
I'd much rather see that than Daria wringing her hands over Tom meeting people he's already met.
I completely agree. And I think that, a quick fix, you know, if we're not going to go back to the beginning and fix it all, a quick fix would have at least been a little satisfying is Helen saying, I'm so sorry that I made you feel that way. You know,
yes.
I did not choose my words carefully, you know?
Right. Take like a little bit of responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. But instead she was just like, no, you know, that's not what it is.
Right.
Yeah, it is rather disappointing, and I really like your solution to this problem.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
On the highway, Jake, Jeffy, and Tom are in the car singing Whoop, There It Is by Tag Team. Oh, my God. As they drive the squirrel far, far away to release it into the wild. They get out of Lawndale County and release the squirrel, only to be struck with a bunch of other manly bonding activity ideas like paintball or fort building or hitting the local go-kart track. I just want to note here that they didn't replace Whoop, There It Is in the DVD or streaming version, which is a nice change of pace compared to the horrible song replacement job they did in Daria Dance Party. I will say this was probably – they probably couldn't get away with replacing – with replacing this one.
Yeah, there's no way. Nothing would have worked.
Yeah. You can try, but when you have all three characters in the scene screaming Whoop, There It Is over and over again,
yeah.
It's hard to mask that with anything.
It could be like a cartoon bad lip reading.
At the dining room table, Daria is still sitting alone when Quinn wanders back in. She asks where everybody went. When Daria tells her, she sits and ponders over whether men and women are even meant to understand one another. Then notices the celery stalks, and all is well. Daria smiles at how much her and her sister have in common. Meanwhile, over at the go-kart track, Jeffy, Tom, and Jake do what men do. And we go to credits with Mikkel Brown's So Many Men, So Little Time. The guys are dipshits energy is so strong in this episode, and I love it.
It is really I think it's handled well. You know, I'm not like super disappointed in this like separation of the sexes at the end of the episode, because it's playing with these tropes and these stereotypes and recognizing, you know, that like the traditional ideas of like what a relationship should be, what a steady relationship or girlfriend should be, is just really silly. Different strokes for different folks, you know?
Yeah.
I think that works. I think there are some things in the episode that don't work, but I think that is handled well. Also, paintball, go-karts, peak late 90s, early aughts, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
CB at TW Sports, y'all.
Yeah. You bet I was thinking about TW Sports.
Oh, my God. There's some good regional South Jersey.
I'm pretty South sure Jersey we've references. Talked about TW Sports before.
We have to have. I mean, it was such an enormous part. It was such an enormous part of my childhood. No Rob Press podcast should go without TW Sports.
We probably talked about it probably in the paintball episode.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I lived right around the corner from there, like literally a 3-minute drive. So, God, we were there all the time. It was so good.
No, it was like a special thing to go to TW Sports for us. But, oh boy.
Yeah. Oh, so much fun. They had a mini golf course, two mini golf courses, both of which had urban legends on the hole signs, you know, or they do like hole one, hole two. Yeah. So they had like urban legends on the hole signs. And one of them was the Jersey Devil, to go back to our urban legends episode. So yeah, that was pretty cool. I don't know. It was a neat little place to learn about like the history of the Jersey Devil was on the mini golf course.
Jersey Devil is all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't get away from it.
Yeah. No, you grew up in South Jersey. You know, the Jersey Devil.
Oh, totally. Your buddy's with him. He went to prom. He went to prom with you.
Pretty much.
All right. So I think now we should probably get into our episode ranking, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should. We kind of, you know, got a little ahead of ourselves, I think. But I mean, like, I think that we've covered kind of like the weaknesses. Or I'm getting ahead of myself. Interstitial music.
Let me hit the interstitial music that you won't be able to hear, and then we'll get into the episode awkward rankings. Okay. All right. So, our normal practice of looking for the writer's previous episode is not going to work here.
No, not at all.
Because they don't have a previous episode.
No. It's the one and only, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Actually, yeah, straight up, it is the one and only. So,
as I was saying before, I think that, you know, we've talked about the weaknesses of this episode, like the fact that, you know, it doesn't really depict Quinn in a favorable or sometimes believable way.
Correct.
And not handling Helen well is either. There could have been some fairly easy plot fixes to this, I think, but they didn't happen.
No.
Unfortunately. But at the same time, I thought it handled a lot of other things well. Like I said, the whole separation of the sexes thing, like dealing with, you know, balancing the like steady relationship to dating around and how ridiculous that is at that age. I think that it does it really well. And of course, Jake's plotline is amazing.
It's gold.
And just how it feeds, it becomes the main plot line, you know, is is really nice. So
yeah.
What do you think?
Oh boy. So this is
it comparable weird to anything?
That's what I've been looking through, and I'm trying to find another episode where we're like, yeah, there's some flawed character work here, but overall it was pretty entertaining and it did do some really neat stuff. And I'm trying to find something similar to that. Like, I mean, you know, our previous episode was Art Burn, right? Art Burn at number 19, where we had, you know, an episode that was pretty entertaining, all things considered, but also had Jane acting pretty oddly. I don't know if they're comparable though. It just doesn't mesh up that well. You know, near that we have Sappy Anniversary, which is another episode about Daria and Tom's relationship and about dating in general and being unfamiliar with dating.
So maybe that is the comparable one.
Yeah, I would say so.
And we did reference it before.
Right.
Hmm.
So, you know, okay, well, in that case, so let me ask you now, is this episode, like, I don't think this episode's better than the Misery Chick. And I bring that up because, so Sappy Anniversary is number 15. All right. So the Misery Chick is number 14. Is It Fall Yet is number 16. So Sappy Anniversary is in like a really interesting spot.
Yeah. It is.
So I guess my question would be like, is this episode better than the Misery Chick? My answer to that would be no, but
no.
I mean, if you disagree, then I'm happy to hear it. But
no.
So then I guess the other question is it worse than Is It Fall Yet?
I don't, maybe. I mean, like, I
think I worse, thought, worse is probably an unfair word there.
Yeah, I don't think that is fair. I think that is, like, as I've come to, like, time and again, you know, what we're doing this, I think that Is It Fall Yet is solid for the, you know, for the form it takes, mm-hmm. you know, like
yeah.
the fact that it stretches, you know, the storyline into an entire movie, it's admirable.
Absolutely.
And
there's a lot of really great character work in there too.
Exactly. And I don't think that this holds up to that Quinn's character work in particular.
Right. So, we're narrowing it down. Because I do think somewhere in this vicinity is about right. Because this is an entertaining episode. I happen to think it's better than Art Burn.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you might be right.
Which puts it, so Art Burn is number 19, which I forget if we've mentioned that already. But so if we're saying under Is It Fall Yet, above Art Burn, we're looking at Lucky Strike and we're looking at Speed Trapped. And this is interesting because I don't know why I feel this way this week, but to me, it's like I feel this episode is better than Lucky Strike, but it's not as good as Speed Trapped. And that does not work with the numbering we have right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm looking back on Lucky Strike a little unfavorably. I'm not sure
so
why.
So what's on your mind about Lucky Strike?
I don't know. I think maybe part of it is just that I'm having – a bit of trouble like placing any one particular thing from that episode. Like I remember the basic plot line, but
okay.
I don't remember a ton of what we had to say about it. That
I think
irks
that,
me.
Like we really liked the way, okay. So one thing that stands out to me is the way that Trent and,
Trent and Mr. O'Neill.
Mr. O'Neill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put together a protest song.
Yeah. And how it showed like Mr. O'Neill is really actually a good teacher. Like he cares, right?
Yeah. He gives a shit. He's a little bumbling, but he really does care.
Yeah. And I thought Mr. DiMartino and Ms. Lee were hilarious in that episode.
Yes. Daria as a substitute teacher. It also had that, okay, yeah. Oh, wow. Everything's flooding back now. You also had that fantastic Quinn moment where she finally gets over the whole, hey, yeah, Daria is my sister thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all, it's like character is all consistent in that episode. And it is for Speed Trapped as well.
Yeah.
Why do you think that this is better than Art Burn?
When we get to that point, I think I'm looking at an episode that also has some flawed character work, right? Mm-hmm. It has Jane acting just a little bizarrely. And as much as that episode like spoke to us in terms of just like the creative process in general and understanding where Jane was coming from in some respects, I think about just in terms of, well, also, yeah, okay. So at Art Burn, you have Jane acting irrationally. You have the entirety of the fashion club being treated like total dipshits, with the possible exception of Stacy, who is adorable and wonderful and deserves all the love. And that stuff bugs me. So when I'm looking at, all right, well, this episode also has some flawed character stuff, right? Like it has Helen being just a little out of sorts with her parental advice. It has Quinn. It has some good Quinn moments, but it also has a pretty not great depiction of her and her intelligence, especially as we've come to know it this season. So when I look at those things, I think, all right, well, which one of these episodes was just more entertaining as an episode of Daria? And in that case, I feel like this one wins out. Like I feel like I would much rather watch 1J at a time than Art Burn.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I want you to talk it out.
I appreciate that. Because so much of this is just like, feeling based, you know?
Yeah.
But it's helpful to be like, I didn't remember anything from Lucky Strike. And then you start talking about it for like 30 seconds and then it all just comes back. It's like, no shit, there was so much great stuff in that episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we could put this above Art Bird and below Speed Trapped. What do you think?
I think that sounds about right.
Okay. All right. Speed Trapped just holds a special place in our heart.
That's a good episode. It's a real good episode of Daria. It's a great Daria and Quinn episode. It's a fantastic Mystic Spiral episode.
Yes.
It's just great all around. All right. So I'm going to type it in, which makes it official because, you know, you can't go back and edit these things.
No, not at all.
So that's one J at a time sitting at number 19 on our list. It is just below Speed Trapped, just above Art Burn. I think that's a very respectable spot for an episode that I did not necessarily expect a whole lot out of.
You know, I had a lot of fun talking about it, and I was laughing out loud when I was watching it. So there is that.
Yeah, totally. I'm looking at, like, so we don't have any season 5 episodes in our top 7, right? Like the first season 5 episode we have in our rankings is at 8, but then 8 through 20 is like half season 5 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. It is like, that's really interesting.
Yeah. It's neat. I'm going to be curious to see how it all shakes out. And I know, you know, we have at least one absolute goddamn banger of an episode left for season 5 that I think is absolutely going to be competing for one of the top spots. But that Looking is all I'm going to say about it. That. Yeah, I'm not saying which one it is. I think fans of the show are like, oh yeah, I know what one he's talking about. But we'll get there when we get there. Anyway, yeah, like I said, that is 1J at a time, number 19, just under Speed Trap, just above Art Burn. A pretty good spot. And I think a pretty good showing for these writers. You know, it's certainly not perfect, but it's definitely an entertaining episode with some really neat little moments. And with that said, I think we can go ahead and move into some fan stuff.
Fan stuff.
People talk to us on the Twitters and we talk to them on the Twitters and then we talk to them on the podcast too.
Right. There's a lot of talking.
There is. There's so much talking. Oh my God. I'm going to hit the interstitial music again. So see you in like 10 seconds.
Awkward Nissa. Silence.
Yeah, totally. Okay, friend of the podcast and purveyor of handcrafted arts, Lulu Van Hoogland, reached out to us on Twitter and had the following to say about our episode on Art Burn.
Should I read this?
Sure.
Or do you want to? Okay.
Oh, you can go ahead.
Yay, Lulu. Okay. So she says, I come to be annoying again. And hey, Lulu, you are not annoying.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. She says, I find Jane, she or they, I'm sorry.
I believe it was she. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. I should have asked ahead of time. I really apologize. I find Jane's situation in this episode relates to the modern day issue of independent artists selling fan art. It is a common idea with artists online that you have to sell fan art to make money and that original work just doesn't sell. It creates this position where some artists find the idea of selling original work absurd because people want what they're already familiar with. It's not an untrue sentiment necessarily, but when you're known for only fan work, original work can be even harder to sell. In the end, it creates a lot of work and ends up being quite similar In the end, it creates a lot of work that ends up being quite similar and or artists feeling depressed and burnt out because they want to do their own stuff. This creates a different issue of many people's original work also being similar. Not the case for everyone, of course. Lulu also added, I'm somewhat defensive of this episode, that being Art Burn, because of the ending. Poor Stacy always gets the short end of the stick, and she finally won. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Friggin' love the end of that episode. It's so heartwarming.
Yeah, it really is. I really love Lulu's point about the fan art. because that is something that people look for on like Etsy or whatever. And yeah, it's got to be really tough. I do not envy the artists.
No, you know, we talked about this during the episode Artburn. Like there, you know, I said it half jokingly, like, hey, someone's got to write the porn. But, right. But like there is a real, you know, there is a real sense in the artistic community of like, yeah, you know, I would love to do my original stuff, but it's not going to sell. And I need to do the stuff that sells. Like people are going to want, you have to make some kind of money to make it worth doing this thing. And I mean, you know, for some people, that's absolutely true. You absolutely do have to make money doing this thing because, you know, that's your vocation.
Livelihood, yes.
Yeah. For other people, it's like, well, you know, if I make money doing it, cool. If not, then, you know, also cool, whatever. Like, I think Morgadorks falls into that bracket where like,
right.
You know, we have a Patreon, obviously. We're never going to retire off of Morgadorks.
Oh, no.
No. Our Patreon makes basically exactly enough to pay for our Zencaster subscription.
Yay.
Yeah, which is awesome. That's fantastic. You know,
yeah.
Absolutely thrilled about it. It makes my life a lot easier.
Yeah, it makes your life way easier.
Yeah. Could not be happier about that.
And it lifts my guilt.
There you go. Great. But even if we didn't have a Patreon, even if our Patreon had no subscribers, like there would still be a Morgadorks because it's not anything we expect to end up getting paid for. We have that privilege, you know, of being able to do this without expecting any remuneration for it. Remuneration. Yeah. And that's just not the case for a lot of artists. And you know, the deeply unfortunate thing that follows immediately from that is, well, if I'm going to go where the money is, then I'm going to end up doing fan art and doing my own interpretations or sometimes exact replicas of stuff that already exists from other creative minds. And it's unfortunate. It's probably a very difficult hole to crawl out of. I mean, if you want to call it a hole, like I'm sure there are plenty of people who are A-okay, like more than happy to do fan art for a living. Like, you know, you get to draw and people are happy to pay for the stuff that you have put down on paper or on canvas or, you know, whatever. There's something to that. There's absolutely something to that.
So thank you, Lulu, for writing in.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
We're always happy to hear from you.
Always happy to hear from you. And especially on this subject, like, you know, this is something that we know hits very close to home for you. You know, I'm sure, you know, you were probably listening to us talk about it, like, you know, from a creative perspective, like, you know, 2 weeks ago, and like,
you're like, you know, nothing.
yeah, basically. but yeah, thank you so much for reaching out. We really appreciate it. And also for the Stacey love because she deserves everything. All right. So I think we're going to hit into our outro, which means one more awkward bout of silence for Nissa while the soundboard does its
really
thing.
I was really looking forward to some groovy music too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I know. Well, now you can just listen to the podcast when it comes
out. Okay.
Here we go. And that about wraps it up for this episode of Morgadorks. Check out our Patreon. You can sign up at patreon.com/morgadorks. For $1 a month, you can support this silly thing we do and listen to an unedited version of each podcast a few days before it airs. As always, please feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at Morgadorks, email us at morgadorks@gmail.com, or check out our website, anchor.fm/morgadorks. We're also on Facebook. Just search for Morgadorks. We'll show up. Special thanks, as always, to Outpost Daria Reborn. Link is in the show notes. As always, thank you, Nissa.
Hey, Rob. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. See you again in 2 weeks for Season 5, Episode 9, Life in the Past Lane, here on Morgadorks.